You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
So I expect that in most Christian or religious festivals, if there's going to be a convicted criminal talking to you, that they're likely to be apologising, saying they've served their time and they've seen the light and they're now back on the straight and narrow. Do you see where I'm going with this? Sue Parfitt is simply the most arrested priest ever. And she's joined here in the hothouse by several of her friends from the Christian Climate Action. Do you want to wave and say hello? Who are represented in a stall in the market over there. Sue is also one of the first ordained women in the country. She was previously big in family therapy, and then she was called to be a priest, and she served in Southwark and Bristol. And since retiring, she's been arrested more than 30 times on behalf of Climate Action and Palestine. And her recent book, Bodies on the Line, is going to be on sale in the Greenbelt bookstall, and she'll be leaving from here straight away, after some Q&A, but she'll be leaving straight from here, so you won't be able to catch her here, and going over to sign some of her copies of the book. So do please make your way over there after the session. And she's chatting to this handsome young man here, Paul Wilson, who used to be a Greenbelt trustee, and he now goes to the same church as Sue. So enough from me. Welcome them, please.
Well, the first thing we're going to do is just a little exercise to find out how rebellious we all are. It's going to just last a couple of minutes. So for those of you who can stand now, I'd like you just to stand. I know it's a bit of bother, but it's good for your knees. Let's just say that. So... I suspect it's quite a rebellious crowd. So please keep standing. Please keep standing if you've ever been on a march, a protest march, for anything at all. If you haven't, sit down. Thank you very much. Okay. Keep standing if you have ever been on a march to do with the climate or to do with Palestine. Gosh. Okay. Very good. Now then, please keep standing if you've ever been arrested for doing this. A lot of rebellious people at the back there. And... last of all, if you are now suspected of being a terrorist for anything you've done, could you stay standing? It's a very solemn thing, isn't it? And we appreciate very much what you've done. Thank you. You can all sit down now. That was useful for us to see who's here. When I started talking to Sue, I asked her, I presume you're doing this, Sue, because you care deeply about the climate and about the people of Palestine and what's happening there. And Sue said...
Well, indirectly, but my primary motivation for doing what I do is out of obedience to what I believe God is calling me to do. So this is, my actions are out of obedience, not disobedience. And I think that's quite important to point out. Now, that means that it's a process of discernment, isn't it, for all of us. And that means that we need, all of us, I think, and I certainly do anyway, need to spend time in prayer every day, because we need to discern the will of God for us at all times. But I have to say that I feel honored beyond measure that God is calling me to do what I do in my old age. And never would I have suspected that I would spend my old age doing this, but but I do feel greatly honored. But I also have to say that, as Thomas Merton famously said, the fact that one believes one's doing the will of God doesn't mean that one is actually doing the will of God. So that's why prayer continues to be a very important part of my life, and hopefully will always be. The second reason for doing it is it's the most commensurate thing I can possibly think of in this kind of polycrisis that we're in at the moment, and the evils by which we are surrounded in terms of the disinformation that we receive, the obvious inequalities and the greed in societies between countries and within countries, and genocide and ethnic cleansing that we see in Palestine, and the terrible inequality between the global north and the global south in terms of the climate crisis. So I don't personally feel that signing petitions and writing by my MP, very important to do, and I keep doing that, is enough. And I feel that this is the only commensurate thing I can do, because it involves me in some suffering and me in some costliness. And that's right and proper and what I want to be the case. And the third reason for doing it is in solidarity with people who are suffering so terribly at the moment, and to give a message to people, for instance, in Palestine, who feel so abandoned at this time because it's difficult to go there, not impossible, and do go there. It gives a message because the press is interested in people who get arrested. And because I am old and because I wear a collar, they, for some reason that otherwise I can't think of, are interested in when I get arrested. So that message goes back to Palestinian friends, and they know that people here are still rooting for them. Even if we don't go as often as we did, we are here for them, and that's really important for us to be able to do.
When you were... when you were ordained as a priest, you made a solemn promise, as I believe every priest is asked to do, which is to resist evil, to support the weak, defend the poor, and intercede for all in need. To resist evil. I think you think part of your calling is to resist evil, don't you?
Yes, I think it's centrally. Well, I suppose, of course, I would say it's central to all our calling as Christians. And it's part of our baptism that takes us into this, isn't it? That we're called to resist evil. And we reiterate this even more strongly, I think, when we're ordained as a priest. So that kind of lays this mandate upon us, I think. I mean, I was quite surprised, I have to say, when Paul did that exercise just now, that so few people here have been arrested. The stalwarts in Christian Climate Action, of course, are arrested all the time. But I am quite surprised, because I think that the evils of our time are such that I cannot imagine this is a better moment to do this. And we are followers, aren't we? Perhaps this is the moment to say this. We are followers of the passionate, non-violent Jesus who was countering the law all the time. He was breaking the law all the time. I mean, this book is in the bookshop, Sacrament, amazing title, The Sacrament of Civil Disobedience. John Deere says Jesus was a walking crime wave. Well, I am proud to follow Jesus as a walking crime wave.
It's not the gentle Jesus that we were brought up in Sunday school. Give us some examples of Jesus as a walking crime wave. When does he do that?
Well, he broke the law all the time, didn't he? We have to realize that, of course, he was living with his fellow men and women under a brutal occupation, the Roman occupation, and so that the religious and the secular authorities were as one, and the complicity with the religious authorities, with the secular authorities, was complete. And they gained a huge amount, as is always the case, from being complicit. Every time Jesus was breaking the Sabbath law, for instance, he was breaking the law. When he walked through the cornfields and was stealing the corn and doing it on the Sabbath, he was breaking the law. And then there were the dramatic moments, of course. Talk about aggravated burglary or trespass. I don't know what you'd have called it. But when he healed the demonic man in the territory of the Gerasenes, and the spirits asked to be sent into the herds of pigs, thousands of pigs, and they were destroyed. They went over the cliff. I mean, that was the livelihood of rich people and the herdsmen, of course, would have lost all their jobs, and they begged him to leave the territory. Gosh, I should think they did. But I mean, compared with breaking up the weapons in the Elbit factories by the Palestinian Action Group, that was nothing compared with what Jesus did on that occasion. So we have to remember these things. And, of course, the much-quoted time when he turned the tables over in the temple and drove out the money changers and made clear that this was not to be the corrupt. I mean, this was the point. It was all about the corruption of the temple at that time that he was, which made life for the poor impossible. It was all about justice. Truth and justice, that's what was central to Jesus's life.
That you've also said there are four principles that govern what you're doing: truth, justice, faith, and love. What do these mean to you?
Well, truth is such an important part of the Christian faith, isn't it? Never more so than at the moment when truth has been so abandoned by governments, by organizations, to get to the truth is a really difficult time now. So Christians have this gift to offer to the protest movement, that we know that Jesus was the truth. He said that he was the truth. So truth is such an important part of being a Christian. And the great thing, of course, about going to court, where one has the opportunity to witness to our faith and to the evils of what's going on, is that one takes an oath at the beginning of the process before you give your testimony. I mean, most of you won't know what you do in court, but you give the solemn declaration that you will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So then when the judge tells you you can't speak about this and that and the other, you can say, But, Your Honour, I've just taken a solemn oath to speak the truth and the whole truth, and I have to speak about climate change or what's going on in Palestine or what have you. And then justice is at the heart of Christianity. I think this, we were talking earlier, I was talking earlier with various people about how we've lost this edge very often. Of course, at Greenbelt, we have this edge of justice, so we forget we've lost it. But in the ordinary parish church, to realize that this is the heart of Christianity, this is what Jesus came about, was justice. This is at the heart of what we're going to be doing, both in terms of climate justice, which is so the injustice for the global south when we continue to burn fossil fuels and have made all our wealth through that over in my lifetime. I've had a wonderful life, and it's been based because, I mean, at 84, the fossil fuel industry has given me a huge amount. So it's important that I give that back. And I have to disagree with dear Fatima Ibrahim, whose talk I went to yesterday, who says this isn't the reason for doing these things. Not for her, I think, for various reasons and her age, but for me at my age, it is a good reason for wanting to redress this injustice. So then we do this because of it comes out of our Christian faith, and we do it for love. This is what we have to offer the climate, the protest movement, I think, to keep reminding people that it's never appropriate to see various groups as our enemies or our opponents. And if we do see them like that, they're never appropriate to shout at police, for instance, shame on you, shame on you. So I think those of us who are Christians always try to stop that and prevent that, because as wonderful Zoe Rogers, who was one of the Palestine Action group that were on trial for smashing up the weapons at the Elbit factory in Bristol, she said, I never forget to remind people. Zoe's here. Wow! We need Zoe up here. We need Zoe up here.
Zoe, come join us.
Zoe, come up here. Come up here. Zoe and I have never met, but I very much want to meet Zoe.
yes, she can meet us after. But what does Zoe say?
Oh, well, Zoe, I want you to say it yourself. I never forget to tell people that what I did was done from love, not from anger, but from love. All I do, not from anger, from love. Where are you, dear one?
Just worth saying, Zoe, if I'm right, was on remand for 18 months in prison for smashing weapons being built in North Bristol, and was 18 months for that, and then acquitted of found not guilty of doing it. But she did it from love. We'll see you afterwards. So let's talk for a moment about moral courage and moral cowardice. I find it humbling myself to have Sue challenge me on moral courage and moral cowardice. What do these two phrases mean to you, Sue?
Well, I think that we need to highlight courage at the moment above all things, because this is a scary time to live. I mean, sometimes I think, well, why did you call us God to live at this time? But in my better moments, I thank God for calling us to live at this time, because it is a wonderful time as well. But it's a scary time. And so we need to look to our forebears. I mean, back a bit in the past, like Gandhi and Martin Luther King and people like that, and steep ourselves in the literature. I was reading Martin Luther King's letter from Birmingham jail a few weeks ago, and I thought, gosh, this is wonderful stuff. Nothing's changed. You know, this is when he was fighting the civil rights movement. But also the more recent people, like Oscar Romero, pretty recent. He was a pretty wonderful and courageous man. But then we've got people like Marion Budde, who faced down Trump in the Washington Cathedral in the opening service. That took a lot of courage. And Bishop Marion has brought a book out in the last few months about moral courage and facing the moral cowardice that we see all around us in governments and organizations. And she talks about the way that courage needs copying, that courage is contagious. That's the first thing she says. Courage, like fear, courage is contagious, and that we need to copy people, like we need to steep ourselves in the literature of the people who have shown courage in the past. And then we need to practice courage. We need to have a go at it, you know, doing scary things. And moral courage, of course, is a bit different from courage that it takes, I should think, beyond what I can imagine, like parachuting out of an aeroplane, or scuba diving. Yes, all these scary things that people seem to manage to do, I couldn't imagine doing them at all. That's courage. But moral courage, I think, is standing up to organizations and people who are...
Keep going. It's just the other tent.
Oh, I see. Sorry. It's the other tent. Moral courage is when you're standing up against governments and the church as well, organizations that tell you one thing, and you know that this is not aligned to truth and justice, holding on to those principles, and it's not aligned to the way we practice our faith, and that we're doing it out of love. So there's, as well as Marion, I mean, now somebody, I think, has a lot to say for people of our time. And you might find this a bit shocking and a bit surprising, but I don't know if those of you are familiar with Etty Hilson's diaries. Now, these were only published in English, thank you, in 2002, I think. And she was a young Jewish woman in the Auschwitz. And there was a lot of history before this. But I just want to quote something, because I think this is quite important for us to grasp. I'm leaping into somewhere else with this, but still. And she says, "I promise you one thing, God, just one very small thing. I shall never burden my today with cares about my tomorrow, although that takes some practice. Each day is sufficient unto itself. I shall try to help you, God, to stop my strength ebbing away, though I cannot vouch for it in advance. But one thing is becoming increasingly clear to me, that you cannot help us, that we must help you to help ourselves, and that is all we can manage these days, and also all that really matters. There doesn't seem to be much you yourself can do about our circumstances, about our lives. Neither do I hold you responsible. You cannot help us, but we must help you and defend your dwelling place inside us to the last. And what I take from that is not only her extreme courage in being very near to death in a concentration camp and holding on so wonderfully to her faith that had come very recently to her, but her recognition that, like us and the climate crisis, like us and other crises that we're faced with, that God is not there to solve these things for us, is he? He's there to be there with us in it and suffering more than we can possibly suffer ourselves. So when we look at Palestine and the terrible, terrible experience, beyond belief, I can't go down this line very much without wanting to cry, so I won't, but the gratuitous cruelty of the Israeli government and the IDF to the women, the children, and the men that are our Palestinian brothers and sisters. And when we look at the global south and people in our own nation and our divided and unjust nation, then we know that it's us that have to find the courage, with God's help, to find within ourselves the resources to fight these evils. These things are evil beyond measure. And whatever the cost to us, whatever it takes, we have to stand against these evils and alleviate God's suffering, first of all. The suffering he experiences in the destruction of his beautiful created order, the suffering that he must experience in what is happening to the Palestinian people. And we must be there to try to alleviate his suffering in it all and be able to be somewhere along the line living up to what Jesus calls us to do. And I just finish this by saying, tomorrow's gospel is about Jesus saying, we're called to follow me on the way of the cross. Anyone who would be my follower is, I call them to follow me on the way of the cross. You know, this is what we sign up for at our baptism. And my parish priest once said, you'd never make a parish priest, because I used to say to parents, are you sure you want your baby baptized? I don't know why I would say it.
We'll come back to your relationship with your bishop in a moment, but I find you very compelling, Sue, in terms of giving us agency or speaking to us about the agency that we have. I think it's common to feel there's so much I can't do anything about it. It's overwhelming, the complexity and the challenge. I don't know what to do. And then we find you and other friends from CCA giving us an example of what to do. I want to ask whether you think this is about ages and stages, whether we're all called to be arrested, or whether, you know, I'm a person who needs to provide an income for a family, and it would be, you know, tell us about that. Do you think we're all supposed to be doing this, or do some of us get to do other things that are useful as well, or is that the only way?
No, of course not. And I think most people aren't. But I think a lot more people are called to be arrested than are, I would say that. And Christian Climate Action is my kind of my alma mater. I mean, I'm so grateful to members of Christian Climate Action, and several of the founder members are here in the group, Melanie Nazareth and Ruth Jarman. These were people who saw back in 2012, long before XR, that there needed to be a group that, and coming out of the Christianity, that opposed the evils of climate crisis, the looming climate catastrophe. And but that doesn't mean that any of us believe that everybody is called to be arrested and go to prison. But ultimately, this was the path that Jesus trod. He knew that he was going to, his actions would take him to the cross to be arrested and then to be crucified. I hope that's not coming our way, but we are called to follow Jesus on the way of the cross, and we'll hear this tomorrow. But I think that many Christians are going to, I think what we are all called to do is to give the whole of ourselves in whatever path that we feel God is calling us to walk. And of course, God calls us in very different paths. And I mean, even within the protest movement, we've got somebody, I don't think she's here this year, Barbara, and we sometimes say to her, don't you ever get arrested, will you? Because she's such a huge support to those of us who do. She provides us with accommodation and so forth and so on. So, no, of course, not everybody is called into this. But those of us who are, we rejoice because we are very honoured, really, to be so cool.
So I think it's a good moment for us to tell us just some of the stories. I'd love to hear four stories, one with Extinction Rebellion Marble Arch, one to do with the M25 and Insulate Britain, one to do with the Magna Carta and Just Stop Oil, and then let's get to Palestine Action. So I begin to see you are something of a serial offender here. So tell us briefly about, if you don't mind, some of the kind of highlights of Sue protesting.
Well,
Marble Arch and Extinction Rebellion.
I was very new to it all. I mean, I was pulled out of my bereavement crisis, really, when I lost my darling husband in 2013 by someone called Phil Kingston. Some of you may know of that name. Yes, yes, Phil. Shout out for Phil. Yeah. Dear Phil, he's 91 now and he's in a sheltered accommodation, actually, not a care home. Anyway, he said to me after I would sit in a heap at his feet week after week saying, I can't cope and I can't ever live again, etc. And he said, oh, come with me to London on next Saturday. Come and see Christian Climate Action I've forgotten the question.
Marble.
Yes, that's right.
Well, you're going to tell us about Marble Arch.
This happens all
Extinction
the time.
Anyway, Marble Arch. So, we're just going to have a quick tour.
Yes, okay. So Christian Climate Action, I got interested in joining, and that was the group that was asked to stop the lorry at Marble Arch at the beginning of the great blocking of central London of Extinction Rebellion in 2019, with many of you may remember, and many of you may have been there. And so we did, and a couple of us got under the lorry and stopped it until we realized the police weren't going to take any notice of any of this, so we could get up and not worry. And so we just blocked Oxford Street for nearly a week. We had a grand piano playing in the street, and it was all a carnival, really, wasn't it? And that was the first time that some of us were arrested in this era. I had been earlier for a peace movement. But on Maundy Thursday, it was Holy Week. And so Christian Climate Action grasps Holy Week as being a time when we do ceremonies and things. And in fact, our vicar came up and did the Stations of the Cross around Edgware Road and managed to, with great presence of mind, he said, when the police arrived and we were processing around, he said, "Father, you can't be here." And he just said, "Now we're going to kneel and pray." So we all knelt down and completely blocked Edgware Road. And so this was very lovely. And then some of us were arrested on Maundy Thursday later in the week. And I remember thinking, this was the night Jesus was arrested. This was the night. And although I was scared, I was elated, really. And lots of us were arrested and taken to police stations on that evening. And so Extinction Rebellion won a great actual victory, didn't they, in that the government declared the climate emergency at the end of all this.
So. Then it escalated to the M25.
Yes, then, of course, there was COP26 going on in Glasgow when we were hosting it, the UK hosting it. And so Just Stop Oil suggested that we would do an action. Well, some of us signed up for that. But you're never told what you're going to do till much nearer the time. And so I remember when we were told that what we were going to do was to sit on the M25 and stop the traffic, I thought, wow, that does sound scary. But anyway, Ruth Jarman, who's here, I don't know, there may be other people who are here who did this, and we did it. And amazingly, this is our court system and everything, Ruth and I and three others are on trial for one of these actions, Insulate Britain, the week after next. 5 years later. 5 years later. So how are you supposed to remember what you did 5 years ago? I can't remember what I did yesterday. Oh, dear. And what was the next one?
Well, the next...
Magna Carta.
The Magna Carta is where you shot to global fame, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. What happened with the Magna Carta? And you have a history degree, so I'm just going to say you're full of respect for history, aren't you? But what was that one?
Yes. Well, indeed, two of us octogenarians were asked if we would do this, and we said yes. And but I certainly went up to the British Library to make sure that what we were being asked to do would not damage Magna Carta, which, of course, it certainly couldn't. So we were asked to just damage a bit of the outer casing of Magna Carta and then wait to be arrested. But it was a terribly difficult job to get arrested. The British Library staff came and looked at it and said, "Oh," I remember them saying, "just go, ladies, go." And we said, "No, no, what you have to do is call the police." So after quite a lot of argy-bargy, they did call the police. And the City of London Police, it was, and they arrived. And I knew the policeman, he knew me. And he said something like, "Oh, Sue, what have you been up to now?" So I said, "Well, nothing much, Tom. It's just over in the corner." And he had a look and he said, "This isn't an arrestable offence. Just go now, you see." And so we said, "No, no, no. This isn't going to get us any publicity at all." And the point I should make here, the reason we were doing this was that the government, and I find this a shocking state of affairs, the government for the second year running had been found guilty of breaking its own law about 2 weeks earlier in the High Court, literally guilty of breaking its own climate law. So three organizations took them to court for 2 years running. And so we were doing this in order to, if you like, unearth Magna Carta and say, the government, this is what it says fundamentally, the government is not above the law. And so this went all over the world, apparently. And the reason I knew that, because I'm not on social media or anything, but that a very senior policeman rang me up while we were in detention that night and said, you know you're celebrities, Sue. And I said, no, because we've been here. He said, well, I'm just ringing up to see you got everything you want and you're okay. And I would never, of course, say who this was, but a very senior policeman. And he said, well, you've done well. Keep it up. And he ended by saying, bless you. And I thought he's probably a Christian too. So it was a very successful action, actually. We won't come to court till next year, though.
And lastly, more recently, a lot to do with Palestine Action, haven't you?
Yes, with many other people, thousands of other people, I've been arrested for holding up a sign, as I'm sure you know, which says, I oppose genocide, I support Palestine Action. And the first time Ruth and I did this together, with 27 other people, and we made 29 altogether, was the 5 days after this organization was proscribed by the government to become a terrorist organization. Totally ridiculous. I mean, the worst thing about this, I think, is the way it demeans terrorism. If you think about the awful terrorist actions that have gone on in the world and in the UK and in Ireland, to call Palestine Action, which is totally focused on smashing up the weapons and opposing the genocide that has gone on and continues to go on in Gaza and the ethnic cleansing in the occupied West Bank, is totally ridiculous. And so many people obviously have felt that, because many people have come out on the streets holding up that sign, which by definition, you are supporting a terrorist organization and you are therefore complicit with terrorism. None of these things have come to court yet, of course, and we still hope that the Supreme Court will overturn the original proscription that and Palestine Action will be found not to be a terrorist organization. Of course, they cause a lot of damage to the weapons industry in Elbit, but then they should have been, and rightly were, charged with criminal damage until a judge got involved and made it terrorism. So that's what we have supported, yes.
In a moment, we'll open to questions, but one couple of last questions as we bring our chat to a close. Your activism has brought you into disagreement with your bishop, and this is a point of sadness at some level, isn't it? Your right to preside was taken away from you. What does that mean to you?
Well, I would be dishonest if I didn't say it was a great sadness to me. It was also a great surprise, because my bishop had been very supportive for at least 5 years. I had to report to her, tell her what was going to happen and what had happened, etc. And she'd always send a supportive email. I think that she was lent upon, really. And I don't know how exactly, but there came a moment when she just said to me, "I'm sorry, Sue, I'm not going to be able to renew your license." That was that, really. So I would be dishonest to say that isn't a painful thing. And of course, I was delighted last year when I was invited to, as an excluded priest, to preside at the Eucharist last year. She's retired, so it may well be that if I feel this is what God calls me to do, I might, if we ever have another bishop, because it seems to be taking a long time, I might ask to see him or her and talk about it. Because I had tremendous support from our parish when this happened. And most people think it's ridiculous. But, it's more than that. Of course, the church is showing it is morally cowardly to do that, isn't it, really? Because the church has to be standing out there, giving a lead to take the actions that need to be taken to stop the fossil fuel industry chiefly, and right out there saying no to the evils of our time, whether they are the evils of war, the polycrisis we're in is interlinked, the drift to war, the hugely major climate catastrophe we face, and of course the ending really of any respect for international law, which is why we have countries so openly complicit with countries that are breaking international law, notably Israel at the moment. So, that's where we're at, isn't it?
Right. So we're going to take three questions at once. Michael's going to help me. And we've got probably enough time for, let's see what happens, but probably a couple of goes.
Because it's so hard to get the microphone to you. We're going to take three questions, shout it out. And Paul and Sue and I will try and hear what you're saying and make sure that the question is repeated and then everyone can hear it. There's one over there. Do you want to shout out? Yeah, lady in the yellow. Okay.
Very good.
So how
question
can we support?
One, what can we do to support? Let's take a couple more.
One down here.
Yeah. I met Guy Dulap, who was imprisoned for 20 months and taken back to prison because they didn't have a tag small enough for her. And her barrister was surprised that she was imprisoned for 20 months. He'd advised that there would be no imprisonment. Do you think things are getting more oppressive?
That's another question.
And could you just repeat that for us? Sorry. We didn't quite get it. Not the whole question.
Are things getting more oppressive?
Right.
Is it getting harder? I was agreeing 2 years ago about radical speech here at Greenbelt, but now I'm discussing criminal speech.
All right. One more question here.
One more question, Paul. Yeah.
Could you outline what potentially the personal costs of being arrested are, please?
Okay, three questions. How do we help people who are getting arrested if we're not? What do we do? Is it getting worse? And what are the personal costs of this?
Well, I don't think any of us would do this without the great support of other people. And the support is the verbal support, the non-verbal support, the wonderful support like I have in the parish that I come from. I know that everybody's on the same page. That's the really important thing. But other people do specific jobs, of course, like coming to the court and being there and alongside taking notes and liaising with press and or offering accommodation. People do crowdfunding because, I mean, none of this comes cheap when you're found guilty. So it's important not to be found not guilty, really, if you want to avoid the fines. Yes, it's getting worse. But to thank you, Annette, wasn't it, who asked that? Yes, thank you for the question, and the support is tremendously important. Yes, it's getting worse, and I think there are, for example, three reasons for supporting Palestine action. First of all, because of what's happening in Gaza and the occupied Palestinian territories. We do it for them, first of all. Secondly, we do it to support the people who belong to Palestine Action are on trial for terrorism. Anyway, I won't get into that, but anyway, we're on trial. And thirdly, to preserve our own civil liberties. Of course it's getting worse, so we want to stand up and preserve our civil liberties.
The personal consequences of being arrested.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's not very awful. I mean, compared, in the scheme of things, there is nothing. But there is inconvenience, of course. You can have your devices taken away. And I take my laptop everywhere I go, because once I was raided by the police, and to have your laptop taken is so awful, really, as you can all imagine. You take about 6 months to get it back, and it's never the same. So, yes, there are consequences, and you know, if you're fine, or you may be spend time. I mean, Ruth and I are going to be about 10 days in court, I suppose, and you've got to find somewhere to stay, and the cost of going up there and all that. But, I mean, these are as nothing, are they? And even if one's sent to prison, I've never been to prison, so I don't have the right to speak like this. But let's talk about Gay, who had that terrible injustice. She's a fellow Bristolian, a good friend. We see each other quite often. I mean, how do you square that? And again with Zoe, are you still here, Zoe? I hope so. On remand for 18 months and then found not guilty. I mean, how do you square those sort of things? So it's just nothing, really, the little we have to put up with.
Let's try and do three more. I know there's one person down here keeps...
Shout out nice and clear, please, and keep your questions short if you can. Okay, two more quick ones.
Two more questions, yeah. There's a young man here.
What's your favourite thing to read when you're in custody?
And another quick one? Any hands? Where? Yeah, can you shout out nice and clear? Have you ever had a crisis of confidence, and when has God spoken most clearly?
A crisis of
confidence in what you're doing.
Yeah.
So three questions. Jules Mercer, the health impact on you, Sue. What do you read in custody and a crisis in confidence?
Well, starting at the end, because this is why I love Etty so much. I mean, how can you imagine being in a concentration camp and coming near to the end? And she's so sweet, the way she talks about her wobbliness. Yes, of course I have wobbliness, yes, every now and then. But it doesn't last long, actually, because I'm mainly... You see, the thing that Martin Luther King talked about so much, didn't he? The beloved community. We only can do any of this by being in a beloved community. Mine is Christian Climate Action. But there are other groups, of course, that we join up with. I mean, our trial group that we're meeting with now to prepare for our trial, it becomes another beloved community. And you get to rely on each other. In situations of danger and difficulty, you get very close to each other. So that's the great support from that. Mostly in the cell, when I'm in a prison, in a police cell, I'm usually trying to argue to be allowed to have my journal and a pen. Now, for some reason, a pen is seen to be as a very dangerous thing to be allowed to have in a police cell. So sometimes they give you a pen without the cover on. Now, if you've ever tried to write with just the end of the pen in your that is a great trial. Sometimes they give you a pencil or a crayon. But a pen is a very, and so it's wonderful to be, sometimes you're allowed to have anything you want. I mean, as for reading, I don't know what I'd take. I just take one book and hope I can have it. You're supposed to be allowed to have one book. Sometimes I can hardly bear to hear myself say it, but sometimes I take the Church Times with me. But I think, well, I might as well read this appalling thing in this appalling. So I don't know what the other one. Oh, health. Yes, that we come back to jewels. We've prayed for jewels. Christian Climate Action meets for prayers every morning at 9 o'clock. Till 10 o'clock, and we study the scriptures for the Eucharist of the day in common worship. Then we reflect on them one after the other, and then we have a bit of chat. And we always have some intercessions for people who are sick in our community or troubles in the world one way or the other. So we have prayed for Jules, and do you have an update? Wonderful news. Well, we give thanks for that. I can't say. I just feel always so grateful and full of gratitude. And but I'm greatly helped. I always have somebody that's by my side. It's usually my dear friend, Ruth Jarman. But this week it's been dear Sophie Franklin. So I'm very lucky. No, I haven't had any bad health.
If you would like to, I think it's an opportunity for you to show your appreciation for Sue by perhaps a standing ovation, if you can stand. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.